Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. Today we are in chapter 11 of Sandeha Nivarani. We had many weeks of chapter 10. Chapter 10 had many segments. And as we move on to chapter 11, we are actually at the halfway mark of the book Sandeha Nivarini. And in this chapter, Bhagwan begins with clarifying some of the concepts in spirituality, some of the terms in spirituality that is used in the Vedanta, and what that actually means. Bhagwan clarifies to us about these sacred terminologies and the secret behind them, the philosophy behind them, the profound wisdom behind these pronouncements that we find in the scriptures. So let us begin chapter 11 with the first segment, 11.1. We will listen to what Bhagwan has given us, and then, like in every episode, we will pray to him to help us understand these ideas and implement them in our lives.
Swami, I have one doubt. Can I ask you?
Certainly. Why do you say, can I ask you?
Some people describe Brahman as Asti Bhati Priyam. What does it mean? How are these related to Brahman?
Is that the doubt? Asti means that which is. Bhati means that which shines. Priyam means, of course, you know it, don't you? Pleasing, desirable, capable of satisfying, all that is priyam to you is Brahman. If you dearly love a dog, that dog too is Brahman. The dog has a name and form. If you remove both your name and form and its name and form, then Brahman alone remains. Name and form are past obstructions or bhuta pratibandha. Getting rid of name and form is Brahman. In all the multifold names and forms, there is inherent just one Brahman, that is Asti. Someone has to be there to see and recognize this. That intelligence which recognizes this is Bhati. There is a yearning, isn't it, to see it, experience it, to seek for it. That is Priyam. These symbolize the natural characteristics of the three.
What is this Satchidananda they speak of?
My dear boy, everything is this only. This is itself Satchidananda.
Swami, since lovableness or priyam is natural, should not everything be lovable? But scorpions, snakes, and wild animals do not evoke love.
You may not love them, but they love each other, don't they? A thief likes another thief. A devotee likes another devotee. Each loves his own kind.
I do not understand all this clearly, Swami. Tell me some example, if there is any, of this Asti Bhati Priyam from the present world.
My dear boy, why say if there is any? When all is Brahman, which one is not an example of that? Now you go for a movie. The picture exists on the screen. It persists. It is. That is Asti. Who sees it and understands it? You. So it is Bhati. The names and forms, which are Priyam, lovable, come and go. Even if you set them aside without being deluded by them, the screen is always there. One point has to be noted here. The pictures fall on the screen by means of a beam of light projected through a small slit in the wall of the machine room. But if it comes from the entire room without the slit, escaping from that limitation, the figures will not be seen. The screen will be fully bathed in light. So too, if the world is seen through the small slit of one's mind, the manifold multicolored creation will be cognizable. If the floodlight of Atmajnana is poured and you see it through the Atma, it will be one unlimited light and no individual picture can be cognized. That is to say, all will be cognized as the one indivisible Brahman. Do you understand?
I have understood it clearly, Swami.
So that is Bhagwan's explanation. Asti Bhati Priyam and Satchidananda being the same. In fact, Bhagwan has explained this in much greater detail in Gita Vahini. Swami says the scriptures describe Brahman as Satchidananda, but in Vedantic vocabulary, he is described also as Asti Bhati Priyam. So both are the same. Swami says Sat in Satchidananda. Sat means that which persists, in the past, in the present, in the future. That is that which is always there. This is the meaning of Sat. And this is what is meant by Asti. Asti also means the same. Asti means is, that which exists. Chit means that which is conscious of everything. Chit means awareness. And Swami says, Bhati also means the same here. Bhati means the awareness, the knowing of a particular object. And Ananda in Satchidananda means unending source of joy. And that is what is meant by Priyam. Priyam also means joy. And then Bhagwan says, all these three, Sat, Chit, Ananda, or Asti, Bhati, Priyam, they are found in every human being. They are found in every beast, every bird, everywhere it is there. And Bhagwan goes on further to explain. Now, if you take Sat, which is Asti, or existence, Swami says the body is subject to destruction sooner or later. Everyone is aware of this, isn't it? No one is ignorant of this, so to speak, elementary fact. Nevertheless, everyone is apprehensive of death. Even though everyone knows about it, and every other day we hear someone leaving the body, still no one welcomes death or no one is eager to meet it. In fact, Bhagwan narrates this little story of Narada when once Brahma asked sage Narada, what is the most amazing thing that you notice on earth? Narada says, the most incredible thing that I see is the dying people and the people who are weeping over the dead people. Those who are themselves nearing death every moment are weeping over those who have died, as if their weeping has any effect either to revive the dead or to prevent their own death. And they say, Brahma asked him, okay, tell me one more amazing thing on earth. And Narada says, another amazing thing is everyone fears the consequences of sin, but no one, but at the same time, everyone continues to sin. Everyone craves for the consequences of meritorious acts, craves for the consequences of punya, but everyone is reluctant to do things that will give them the consequences of punya. Anyway, going back to the first thing where everyone knows that death is inevitable, Bhagavan says in Gita Vahini, you have to meet it even though you do not welcome it. You try to avoid it. All that is born has to die someday. Still, no one likes to die. What is the key to this paradox? Why does one not welcome death? What happens during death? What leaves? What remains? The answer is the body dies. The body falls. The body has its time up. But what does not die is the Atma. Swami says, but you delude yourself into thinking that it is the Atma or the you that is dying. You cry as if you are dying, but you are not the body. The Atma has nothing to do with birth and death. The body experiences death. The Atma is eternal, pure, nitya, satya, nirmala, nischala, as Bhagavan used to say. And he does not die. You are the Atma which does not like to die and which does not die. You are eternal. Your nature is eternal. The Atma is the child of immortality, as Bhagavan says, Amrutasya Putraha. The body is not Amrutasya Putraha. The Atma is eternal. The Atma is that entity which goes on. And it is this Atma that is there in every casement, in every being. Every being feels the force of that eternal. Every being is a form of this eternal, unchanging existence. So this, Bhagavan says, is Sat or Asti. Asti or Sat means that which is all the time there, which is all the time true, which is eternal, which is a permanent basis. And that is what is Asti. Now Swami says, let's move to Chit. Now, chit means consciousness, the force that urges you on to know things. Everyone is eager to know about anything that is apparent to their consciousness, isn't it? If you see something, you want to know about it. You see a person walking with a support, you want to know why it happened, how it happened. You see someone going in a stretcher, you want to know what happened, who is this person. You see someone excited. You see someone crying. You see people who are gathered there. You want to know what is the issue there. What is this? How does this happen? Why did this happen? Continuously we ask. We want to know. And we ask so many questions. Some may find answers, some may not find answers. Swami says, there is this thirst, this urge in everyone, isn't it? If you take a little boy to a marketplace, to a exhibition, or to a bazaar, you will see that the boy does not simply move along. As he sees various things, he will continuously keep asking these questions. What is this? Oh, I don't know the name of this fruit. Oh, what is this beautiful flower called? Continuously the boy would seek answers. He will continuously asking the person who's leading him by the hand, what is this, what is that? Maybe there are some things he does not know. There are some things that are beyond his power of understanding, yet the streams of questions will never dry up. There is this hunger for knowledge. It is the power of intelligence that is expressing itself. It is not in its nature to leave things alone. It cannot rest until knowledge is gained. In fact, they say that there was this little study about questions that children ask and say, so they say that children ask questions for at least three essentially different reasons. One is to get information about something. The second is to make contact with adults for the sake of interaction itself. They simply want to converse. They simply want to get attention. And that's why they would ask, they would talk. Or they would just want some confirmation, some consolation, some attention. And the third reason they continue to ask is they want permission. They want to be able to act in accordance with their needs and wishes. They want to do something. They want to get permission so that they can do that. So there are different reasons why children ask questions. They say on an average, children ask about 70 to 80 questions every day. I think that's still a small number. So this principle of intelligence is self-luminous. It has the power to illuminate even inert things, Swami says. That is why these qualities shine in people and make other things clear to them. So, Bhagavan says here, asti is that which is. Bhati means that which shines. And what is this which shines? It is this intelligence. This has a light of its own. So that is bhati. Now moving on to the third one, priyam. And in Satchidananda, again drawing the parallel, finally, it is Sat, Chit and Ananda. And what is this Ananda? Swami says even beasts and birds, everyone craves for joy. Without any prompting, without any persuasion from others, everyone wants happiness, everyone wants joy. Isn't it? That is the eternal quest of everything, every person on the planet. Everyone makes every effort to win this joy. Not one wants sorrow or grief or pain. Everyone makes effort to escape from pain, escape from trouble, escape from grief, put an end to their troubles. People want unbroken joy at all times and in all acts and activities. At no time or place, at no stage of their life, does anyone want any sadness. People pray for the joy and happiness of themselves, of their family, their friends. They worship because of this. They sing devotional songs because of this. They keep vows because of this. They do spiritual rites because they want this. They undertake pilgrimages because they want to be all the time away from sorrow and be blessed with joy. They make gifts. They offer gifts also for this. When the body suffers from any illness and the doctor prescribes a medicine to cure it and make one healthy again, one wants even that to be sweet, soothing and pleasant. Even the medicine, you want that it should be pleasing. It should be palatable. It should be easy to take. It should not be something that troubles me. It should not be an injection. It should not be very bitter. That also we want that it should not give us any pain. Swami says, what is the root of this? What is the root of this desire? What it means is fundamentally everyone is of the nature of being happy. And Swami says, bliss is your personality. We are all fundamentally happy people. We are happy-natured people. We are not of the nature of the body that we occupy. We are not the body. We are all the time seeking happiness, or we are all the time in a state where we long for happiness, because we are the Atma, and Atma is all the time synonymous with bliss. Happiness is the nature of the Atma. That's why if someone smiles, you don't ask why you're smiling, isn't it? That is our nature. If someone smiles, we feel very happy. We feel very pleasant. That is how we should always be. But if you're crying, there'll be 10 people who will come and ask you, what happened? That is unnatural to us. That is not how we should be. That is alien to our natural self. But if you're smiling, people also will smile back. Because that is how we are supposed to be all the time. You see a child in the cradle. The child is simply playfully laughing at itself. You know, it is jingling the bells and playing with some toy, perhaps. Something is making it smile. It doesn't need a reason to smile. Simply, there's a beautiful bloom on the child's face. And no one is worried about it. No one is surprised about it. Everyone is happy about it. Everyone thinks it is normal. No one loses their peace of mind. Oh, why is the child smiling? Oh, why is the child simply laughing? Why is the child simply enjoying? No one questions. You feel very happy. You feel, then everything is all ready. The child is smiling, then everything is fine. Then there is no problem. And that is what is our real state, Swami says. If the child for some reason stops playing, stops smiling, stops laughing and starts shrieking or weeping, then everyone within the earshot will run towards the cradle. They will now frantically search the bed. What happened? What is troubling the child? They will see the bed closed. They will see what is the problem. Why is the child crying now? Is it hungry? Does it want to change the clothes? What should we do? Or is something poking? Is something bothering? What is it that has changed the normal state of the child? If the child is smiling, no one questions. If the child cries, that is something that everyone feels we need to do something about. Joy is our nature. Grief is unnatural. If a friend of our or a relative of ours is happy and affluent, as I said, we don't all the time go and ask, why you're happy? No, I'm just happy. But if someone is very sad, you will definitely go and ask, what happened? So this is the nature of the Atma. And because this is our true nature, that this is the reason why we always crave for it, because it is like fish to water. The fish will always want to be in water. The Atma always likes to be enjoyed. We are truly not the body, we are the Atma. That is the reason why we all the time seek this happiness. And Swami says, being, awareness, bliss, sat, chit, ananda, asti, bhati, priyam. It is there in every being. It is there as the very core of one's existence. It is all part of every person, every being. All of us want to be in joy. All of us want to know things. And all of us know that there is a permanent thing within us. That is what is Sat Chit Ananda. In a divine discourse that Bhagwan delivered in the Purnachandra Auditorium in 1987, on the 11th of August, Bhagwan gave an example and said, see, here is a tumbler. The tumbler is, that is Asti, that is Sat. You can see it. Then, the quality of being able to perceive that the tumbler exists, that is bhati. That is chit, the cognizability. And the very fact that you are enjoying that tumbler, the tumbler is giving you some joy, that is priyam, that is ananda. Though there is only one, Swami says, we see it in many we see it in many forms and names. The spirit has no form. It is capable of assuming the form of the container which it fills. When air is filled in a balloon, it has the form of the balloon. When it fills a football, then it forms, if it takes the form of the football. When it is there in a pillow, it takes the form of a pillow. Air has no form. But air has only one quality, and that is consciousness. That is Sat, the Atma, that is there everywhere. It can occupy any space. It can occupy anything. In fact, Sri Adi Shankara says that we are all one consciousness, experiencing differently, subjectively, because of different karma. Actually, there is nothing like death. Life is just a dream. He says, as we discussed before, we are just eternal beings. What we think is reality does not exist. As Bhagwan would often say, what you see when you sleep is a night dream, but what happens during the day, this is a daydream. This is also a dream. What the entire quantum physicists have understood is just a part of Advaita philosophy, which Adi Shankara gave to us, enlightened us, which is there in the Vedas. The unchanging reality by common people is called God. Scientists call it consciousness because there is no other way they can explain how one particular thing behaves sometimes as a wave, sometimes as a particle. Why? What is that intelligence that is governing everything? They can only call it as consciousness. And the people who believe in God, they say it is energy. So Adi Shankara says everything is that same consciousness, but everything appears differently because of our own actions. Brahmam satya jagat mithya, jivo brahmevana, brahmeva na aparaha. Brahman is the only reality. The living entity is not different from Brahman. This is what Adi Shankara mentions, and you can very easily draw a parallel to what is happening in modern science today. If you look at the scriptures and try to understand this Asti Bhati Priyam, you have these verses in our ancient spiritual texts which says Asti Bhati Priyam Rupam Nama Chaitanya Sapanchakam Adhyatrayam Brahma Rupam Jagat Rupam Tatodvayam. What it means is all these five, Asti Bhati Priyam Rupam and Namam, they all pertain to dealings in the world. But the first three, Asti, Bhati, Priyam, are the nature of Brahman. They are the nature of Brahman. And that's what Swami says here, isn't it? Asti, Bhati, Priyam, they are all, if you remove the name and form, it is only Brahman. The name and form belongs to the world, but Asti, Bhati, Priyam belongs to the nature of Brahman. Let us spend a little more time to understand this. As we said, Asti means a thing is. Bhati means it shines. It shines in my knowledge. And Priyam means it pulls. There is an attractiveness about that object. And this is there in every object. Every object which has a name and form, isn't it? And sometimes you might feel, but that attractiveness is not clear to us. Just like here, the devotee asks, I don't feel drawn to a scorpion or a snake. You are saying that everything is lovable. Everything has lovability, but I don't feel good to go near a spider. Now, Bhagavan says, there is love in everything. You may not be able to experience it, but there is a spider probably will be loved by another spider. A snake probably will be loved by another snake. You are not in a state where you are able to experience that attractiveness of that snake. That a thing is, exists, asti, that's an experience. But to experience the attractiveness, the priyam part, how can we experience it? We can experience it if we give up our demand of what attractiveness is. Because we are looking at it through our definition of attractiveness. I feel something's attractive if it is in this way. To my eyes, this looks pleasing. Or this smell is nice for my nose. So I see it only through this limited perception. But if I drop all my definitions of what attractiveness is, then probably I will see it everywhere because it is everywhere. This happiness, this love, this is there everywhere. Everything has a potential to make us happy. But what we need to do is to invoke or explore that potential. So everything that has name and form is associated with asti, bhati, priyam. Everything is, everything shines, everything is attractive. Everything is dear, everything is a source of happiness. Every object is unique because every object has its own name and form. And every object is different from every other because every object also has universality. Universality. Every object is different in name and form, but at the same time, every object has in it asti, bhati, priyam. Take for example, a pot. There is something that distinguishes one pot from the other. There is something unique about every pot. The shape, the name, the form. But what is common in all the pots is the clay. Similarly, in this world, there is something that separates each object and being from another. And that is what is the name and form. Name and form separates me from my friend, me from my relatives, me from my brother and sister. But at the same time, there is something that unites me with my brother and sister. There is something that unites me with my friend and everyone. And what unites me is this asti, bhati, priyam. What distinguishes me from the other is name and form. But what unites me with another person, another being in this cosmos is asti, bhati, priyam. That is what is the power of asti, bhati, priyam. The pot has no existence apart from the clay. The pot is therefore nothing but clay. And that is the unifying factor. That asti, bhati, priyam is the universal aspect of all objects. The truth of all objects is nothing but asti, bhati, priyam. Everything is a source of knowledge and everything is beautiful. That is what is asti, bhati, priyam. Everything is ananda. Everything is full. Everything is whole. If we go to the truth of an object by progressively subdividing it into building blocks, in the end nothing will remain. But then something still remains. What is it? What still remains is the one who divides it. and the one who divides it remains. Similarly, so this asti bhati priyam is what is associated with every name and form. In fact, it is the nature of the very subject who asks. The person who asks, that is the nature of that person who asks is asti bhati priyam. Brahman is. We slowly move from that stage of Brahman is to the stage of I am Brahma. As they say, it is paroksha jnanam. Brahman is paroksha jnanam. I am Brahma is aparoksha jnanam or direct knowledge. We recognize initially that the essence of everything is asti bhati priyam or satchidananda. First, we see that everything has asti bhati priyam. Everything is satchitananda. Everything is truth. Everything is consciousness. Everything is capable of giving bliss. I have to be in a position to understand and experience that bliss. I have to be in a position to understand and see that light and see that joy and experience that existence. That is what is asti bhati priyam. So that is the stage we start. And then we move on to the stage when we recognize that I am that Satchidananda myself. It's not that everything around is only asti bhati priyam. I am that Satchidananda. Always I am, always I shine. Never am I an object of dislike to myself. I am Brahman. I am Sat, I am Chit, I am Ananda. I always shine in my consciousness. I always exist. I love myself. It is unconditional love. Regardless of who I am, what I am, I accept myself wholly. Asti bhati priyam is my own self. So there is, if I recognize that I am that asti bhati priyam, I am not the body, but I am that asti bhati priyam, I am lovable, I exist, and I am luminous, I am always in ananda. I think these self-assertions, which are not figment of imagination, but eternal truths, if we can contemplate on this, then Swami says you will be able to eliminate that which divides. You will be able to live in that unity. You will be able to see that completeness. What is creation? The creation. Swami says you will find creation is absolutely complete. There will be nothing incomplete in you. There will be nothing incomplete outside. Purnamada, Purnamidam, Purnat, Purnamudachate. The creation is complete. I am also complete, and from what arises also from this is only completeness. This is the Shanti Mantra from the Yajurveda. That is full, this is full. When you take fullness out of fullness, what remains also is full. This completeness can be experienced once we go out of the bounds of name and form and feel that I am that asti bhati priyam, that is my very nature. Swami in fact gives this beautiful example of vibhuti. Swami says people smear this vibhuti on their foreheads. People take this vibhuti and they put it in their mouths. People very keenly, very traditionally apply vibhuti on their head. What is the significance of the vibhuti? If you take any object, once you completely burn it, once the name and form of that object completely is gone, what remains is only ash, isn't it? Once you reduce that thing into ash, then everything is same. All things are one and the same in that final state of ash, isn't it? Swami says, when Bhagwan gives us vibhuti, Swami wants us to understand this oneness of things. How ultimately, once the name and form is gone, everything is just one. That commonality. And how do we reach there? By getting rid of ahamkara, Swami says, and mamakara. Ahamkara is that ego arising from the feeling of separateness. I am this and he is that. This is my name, or this is how I look, and this is how he looks or she looks. And this is mine. That is mamakara. Swami says, this ahamkara and mamakara, these are based on name and form. But once you destroy, slowly you give up your ego, slowly give up this feeling of mine and thine. Slowly, in fact, that is the reason why Swami used to ask us to do seva. Because seva will help us to reduce our ego. Seva will help us to broaden our heart so that we lose this sense of I and mine. And that is when all the spiritual sadhana comes into play. And that's the reason why Swami used to say that all the sadhana, without understanding the purpose of the sadhana, if we do the sadhana, then again that's of no use. We do this sadhana to reach this oneness. We do this sadhana so that this ahamkara and mamakara will reduce. Once ahamkara and mamakara reduce, then that we will not be so bothered by different names and forms, that we will not think about that which separates us, we will think about that which unites us. We will be able to slowly experience the underlying unity of divinity which is there in every person. I said people talk of Advaita, people talk of non-dualism, but hardly, very few people try to practice that in their real life, in their professions. Unfortunately, there are not many gurus also who can guide. Swami says you don't need a guru. Your Atma is your guru. The Atma is that eternal witness. You listen to the conscience. There is this conscience in every person. There is this voice of God within all of us. Let that conscience be your guide, Swami says. The mind has to be turned inward towards the Atma, towards the eternal, towards the unchanging. Then we'll be able to see that one divinity, immanent in all things. Swami says, what is it that you have gained from all the pujas you have done and all the discourses you have heard? If you are not able to progress even a little from the state of duality, then you are not progressing, then you are not gaining, you are not growing on the spiritual path. We have to move towards the higher consciousness. We have to proceed from dualism to Visishta Advaita, to partial non-dualism, and then reach the stage of Advaitic consciousness, then reach the stage of non-duality. When we do a sadhana, when we study the scriptures, when we meet saintly people, when we listen to Bhagwan's discourses, Swami says all of these practices should take us towards that oneness, should take us to that principle where we don't see duality, where we are more and more, our heart broadens to such an extent that the other's pain becomes our pain. the other sorrow becomes our sorrow, because we are moving out of the bounds of our own body. We are expanding our heart, we are expanding our mind, we are expanding ourselves. And I think that is what we saw in Bhagwan's life, isn't it? Bhagwan is that Satchid Ananda Murti. Bhagwan is that Asti Bhati Priyam. Avatar takes a human form for us to learn by looking at their lives. That is why an avatar comes. That is why Krishna came. That is why Bhagwan was there with us. And we saw how for Bhagwan the body did not matter at any point in time. How when Bhagwan returned after a surgery that was performed on his body way back in 2003, and as when he was being taken back to his room, he was indicating, he was trying to tell something. And the people who were taking care of Bhagwan, the servitors, they went near Bhagwan and Swami. Swami was concerned. Swami was saying, no, those doctors and those nurses and those people have come, you know, when to make arrangements to give them some tea and snacks. And the people who were serving Swami, they were shocked. Swami, you have just come out of the theater, and they were carrying Bhagwan to his room. But this Bhagwan never thinks about the body. That is how a heart should operate. To be able to see that divine principle in everyone. That is what is this journey. I am reminded of how when Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa was in his final moments, and he was not able to eat because of the cancer that had affected his throat, and somebody prods him, why don't you go and ask the mother? Why don't you tell the mother that you're not able to eat? And he goes to the mother and says, this is what people are telling me, that you should cure me. And mother says, why? What difference does it make if you don't eat through one mouth? You have so many mouths, isn't it? How does it matter if you don't eat through one mouth? So this is where Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa was being led to by the Divine Mother. And that is what is the stage that Bhagwan wants all of us, you know, when we do seva, when we do bhajans. And we have experienced those moments in our bhajans, isn't it? Even during bhajan sessions, you lose sense of yourself, that you are that particular person with a name and form. You're just in a sea of bliss. You are in that ananda. And I think once, as Bhagwan very beautifully says here, when you look at a movie, in the movie screen, you see a beam of light that is projected through a small hole in the wall. If light came not through that small hole, but if light came without any limitation, then you will find that the screen is full of light. The projection does not happen through a small slit, but the entire light falls on the screen. Then you will not be able to see those movies. You will not be able to see those screens. Everything is just light. Swami says that is what happens. When you see through that limited vision, that's when you see all these different names and forms and scenes. But when that floodlight of Atmajnana is poured, that floodlight, that is what is the light of the Atma, then you will not see anything as different. Everything is just light. Everything is just indivisible Brahma. I think that is where Bhagwan wants us to slowly progress towards. Everything is beautiful if we can raise ourselves, if we can expand our heart. There is nothing that is not beautiful. We may not like a particular animal, But someone else loves that animal. That animal responds to love. That animal has its own family. And they live with love. It's just that I am not able to fine-tune myself to appreciate that beauty, that priyam, that ananda. So I think to be able to see everything in this of this creation in this enlightened perspective, that everything is Sachidananda, everything is capable of giving joy, then you'll always be in joy. Because everything around you is joy, and slowly you will realize that you are that source of joy in this world. And that is what is living with this feeling of Asti, Bhati, Priyam. As Swami says, you dearly love a dog. That dog is Brahman. The dog has a name and form. If you remove both your name and form and the dog's name and form, then what remains is only Brahman. So to be able to expand our heart, wherein we are able to see the manifold creation in its enlightened state, not see the differences, but see what unites, is what is the journey of every spiritual aspirant. And that is what all our spiritual practices should lead us to move from the state of duality to, Swami says, Visishtadvaita, to qualified non-dualism, to absolute non-duality, that which Adi Shankara talked about and that Bhagwan also stressed. Because ultimately, Swami says, that is the only way you can unite people. You can unite people not by ensuring that everyone has the same income or everyone lives in the same kind of houses or drives the same cars, only by recognizing that everyone has within them the same divine principle. What is making me special? It is the same thing that is making that person special. If I recognize that thing which is making that person so beautiful, the same thing which is making me so beautiful, if I recognize that principle, then we'll be able to see that unity. Then I will not want that person to suffer. I will not want that person to have a day of sorrow. I think recognizing that is what is unity. Recognizing that is what is equality. I think that is what a spiritual world will grant us. That is how there can be happiness in this world. You cannot have material equality in the world. You can feel spiritual equality, and that will ensure that everyone is fine, everyone is loved, everyone is cared for. So this is what Bhagwan gives us in this first segment of chapter 11 of Sandhya Nivarini. When we think deeper and deeper about it, you know, you slowly appreciate it more. Slowly you begin to think about it deeply. Slowly you see how, if I can raise myself a little, how I can convert every little thing of my life into a thing of joy. If only I can not identify myself every time with this limited consciousness of I'm the body, and if I relate more and more to the source of who I am, if I relate more and more to the Atma, then how everything changes. And that is the journey that all of us have to make. And let us pray to Bhagwan to guide us in this effort. There is this beautiful bhajan, soham, soham, dhyana karo. Soham is I am that, I am that. Swami says, soham, I am that. To always feel that I am that Atma, I am not this body. I think that is, you know, bhajans help us in so many ways to think about these deeper concepts. When we say Gopala, Go is Atma. It's the Lord who is the caretaker. That's what it means. When we sing bhajans, when we do seva, if we keep this perspective in our mind, then every activity will take us closer and closer to our ultimate destination. We'll become closer and closer to permanent joy and permanent happiness. So, dear brothers and sisters, we'll continue this in the next session. There is so many more beautiful concepts that Bhagavan has brought to light in this chapter 11 of Sandhya Nivarini. As always, if you have any queries, you can write to listener@ssmediacenter.org. You can also send us your queries on our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. I leave you with that beautiful bhajan, Soham, Soham Dhyana Karo, because this is a bhajan that definitely helps us in having these elevating thoughts. I leave you with this powerful bhajan so that it helps us to contemplate deeper within. Thank you so much, Sai Ram.
Soham, soham, dhyan karo. साई ध्यान करो
सद्गुरु साई ध्यान करो
सद्गुरु साई ध्यान करो
सद्गुरु साई ध्यान करो
सोहम सोहम ध्यान करो
सोहम सोहम ध्यान करो
सोहम ब्रह्मा सोहम विष्णु
सोहम ब्रह्मा सोहम विष्णु
सोहम ब्रह्मा सोहम विष्णु सोहम साई ध्यान करो
सोहम साई ध्यान करो
सोहम साई ध्यान करो
सोहम साई ध्यान करो
सोहम हृदय भरो
ब्रह्मानंद से हृदय भरो
ब्रह्मानंद से हृदय भरो
ब्रह्मानंद से हृदय भरो
सोहम सोहम ध्यान करो सद्गुरु साई ध्यान करो
सद्गुरु साई ध्यान करो
सोहम सोहम ध्यान करो
सोहम सोहम ध्यान करो
सोहम ब्रह्मा सोहम विष्णु
सोहम
साई ध्यान करो